Hello there, welcome to this episode of the SCIF Meetings podcast featuring Gianna Gaudini, event strategist, consultant, speaker, and author of The Art of Event Planning. My name is Miguel Neves, and I'm the editor-in-chief of SCIF Meetings. And in this conversation, we talk about Gianna's intentional career progression from a young age. We talk about the book and course that she's developed based on her professional experience. And we talk about her recommendation for taking alternative trainings and how they sometimes are more interesting to career development than industry certifications. We talk about keeping cool under pressure, and she shares some very interesting examples from her time at SoftBank. We talk about talking the language of business and how important that is when running large events, particularly for large corporations that are counting on events for real business development. And Gianna talks about how happy she is that wellness is such an important part of the careers of industry professionals all around the world. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Gianna Gaudini, and I invite you to check out the other episodes of the SCIF Meetings podcast. If you like what you hear, make sure to rate the podcast and leave a review. Now for a word from our sponsors, PHL Life Sciences, a division of the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau. Host your convention or trade show in Philadelphia, one of America's leading life sciences hubs. PHL Life Sciences, the first and only CVB division of its kind, will connect you to the professionals at the forefront of your industry and to a culture you can only find in Philadelphia. A city known for its rich history that's forging a bright future, Philadelphia challenges the expected and defies convention. A world of discovery is waiting. Visit phllife.com to learn more. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the SCIF Meetings podcast. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Gianna Gaudini, event strategist, consultant, speaker, and the author of The Art of Event Planning. Gianna, thank you for joining us today.
So happy to join you, Miguel.
So, Gianna, for those who are not familiar with your work, your book, can you talk us through a little bit of your kind of history with event planning? And I'd love to start where you first came into contact with events, with kind of business events, if you will.
Definitely. So, you know, I share about this, actually, the beginning of my book, but like many of us in this industry, I did not intend to go into event planning as a career. I kind of fell into it. So I was actually studying pre-med at UCSD in California. And about halfway through my my college career, I realized, you know, maybe pre-med is not for me. But I did realize that I had a passion for convening people. I had started this thing where, you know, in an effort to, one, hone my cooking skills, and two, meet new people, I was cooking dinners on Wednesday evenings and inviting people to join me. And who doesn't want a home-cooked meal when you're in college? So, you know, basically these Wednesday dinners started proliferating. We'd have more and more folks joining, and it became a real wonderful meetup. And, you know, I think it was a little bit more elevated than people were used to. I'd have curated playlists and, you know, tablescapes. And, you know, I was really testing out some pretty elaborate meals. And it made me realize how much I love hospitality, how much I love stimulating conversation, creating memorable experiences for people, building community is a real passion that drives me. And so, you know, after I graduated from college and had to sit down and have that real hard conversation with my parents about what am I going to do now? I went through all these exercises in a book, great book I still recommend to folks. It's called How to Get a Job with Any Major. I went through all the exercises and landed on an event planning career. And, you know, so I actually convinced my parents that this was a good idea, saying that I had a 10-year plan. And at the end of 10 years, my goal was to run my own business. And, you know, actually what ended up happening was I started on the agency side in San Francisco and worked for about 5 years, getting kind of the nuts and bolts and cutting my teeth on event planning on the agency side before going in-house at Google. And I loved Google so much. I stayed there for 9 years. And then from there went on to run global events for SoftBank Vision Fund. And from there went on to lead global events, training and certification for Amazon Web Services. And from there went on to build and run the global event team and strategy for Airtable. And just now, 20 years later, am officially, dedicating myself to my own event planning business as a strategist and a consultant. So corporate, was just a wonderful, wonderful experience for me. I learned so much about go-to-market strategy and how to be an event strategist. And, I wrote a whole book, The Art of Event Planning, in 2019, just because I had so many incredible experiences that I wanted to share more broadly with our events community. So, it's kind of come full circle now, but happy to share more if you'd like me to go deeper in any of those areas.
Absolutely. So wanted to pick up on something you said. I mean, it sounds like your kind of corporate career was very intentional from the start. Am I picking that up right?
Definitely. When I set off on this journey, this event planning journey, it was always intended to be a career, a lifelong career. And I don't think a lot of people have that intentionality when they decide what they want to do with their lives. But I knew event planning was for me because I knew that there was so much you could do with event planning. And I have to say that I continue to learn every year. You never stop learning in this industry. You're always evolving. I mean, look at AI and how we're all now learning about how to incorporate AI into events. And we're having to pivot with virtual events and, incorporating that into an event portfolio. There's just so much to learn. And there's so many trends that are always evolving. So, that's why I really loved this career. And I think with corporate, it's a lot more complex than people imagine. And so I think it's easier in some ways to build a career that evolves with corporate because there are just so many complexities and it is so integral to companies' brand building and go-to-market strategy. Humans at the end of the day are really relationship-based and events are kind of the heart of that. So.
And curious, have you seen that evolve over the years? Because you've had quite a fascinating journey with quite large corporations, right? And this human-to-human need, if you will. I think a lot of guests talk to us about the COVID pandemic and how that sort of reaffirmed that need that we have to meet. How have you seen that, companies approaching this kind of need to meet, if you will?
Yes, I've definitely seen it evolve. I think, when I was at Google, I was really fortunate that I joined in 2010 and was there until 2019. And I see that as really, it was such a golden age of experiential. I was running all of our agency days, meeting with, tens and tens of agencies because we were doing these really, really experiential events and so much surprise and delight. And things were, we had so much budget to devote to creative and experiential and try new things and go for moonshots. And it was, I think that's what really inspired me to write my book too, is there was just so much magic that I wanted to share from all those experiences I was able to plan. Then of course, COVID shifted a lot of that. And then we went into a little bit of a downturn where a lot of budgets were cut during the macroeconomic downturn. And so, as meeting planners, we have to be super flexible and be able to pivot based on the macroeconomic environment, based on business needs, based on our customer needs. And, kind of at the intersection of all those is where we can spin out a successful event strategy. And so in leaner times, I found that you kind of cut back on some of those extra elaborate experiences and maybe focus more. And I think it's funny that my husband is a product manager, and I see a lot of similarities between building and running successful products and then seeing and running events as a product. You really need to focus. You really need to focus on the user. And if you kind of use that lens to produce events, I think you can be very successful with corporate events.
Yeah. You mentioned your book, and I'd love to kind of talk about that a little bit. So you wrote your book while you were still in corporate world, right? And tell us a little bit about who it's for and what you're trying to achieve in writing this book.
Yeah. So I published my book in 2019 while I was still at Google. And the book was written, it was written so that it could be applicable to the broadest audience possible. And that's very challenging to do, especially when we talk about focus. But I think I was able to achieve that. So the book starts out with how to find your niche in building a career in events, because I went through that myself, and it's tough. There's so many different paths you can take, from hotels to agency to brand to strategist. There's just a lot of different paths that you can take with events. And so I start with that. And then I go, kind of through the whole gamut of the nuts and bolts of how to be strategic with negotiating contracts. That was something that, I let a lot of Google was contract negotiation. And so it's something that people are always interested in, to how to build a successful event agenda, to how to build surprise and delight into your events. So there's multiple chapters that kind of apply to everyone, whether you're first starting out in events and curious to get an idea of where you find your place and your footing and kind of the nuts and bolts, all the way to people that are as experienced as I am can still glean insights from it. And I wanted to make this book interesting. I think a lot of event textbooks, first of all, there's not enough of them, because as most of your audience probably knows, event planners are so darn busy, it's impossible to have time for anything else. I was lucky in that I had a one-year-old who took two naps a day when I was writing my book. So on the weekends, I would hunker down during his naps and write. But there's just not a lot of good resources out there. And then the event books that are out there are kind of boring, to be honest with you. They're very, they're kind of just about the basics. They don't have a lot of storytelling woven into them. And we like to, build stories and storytelling and narratives into our events. So why not build that into a book about events? So what I did is throughout every chapter of the book, I wove in anecdotal stories from my career to make it interesting for people and to show, real life examples. And there's actually a couple of universities now that are using my book as a text for their event courses. And the students are saying that it's a lot more interesting and relevant to them because it has kind of these real world applications that are a little bit more interesting to read.
Have you received any feedback on the book? Like, are there stories in there that resonate the most with the readers?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, you can take a look at the comments on my website, on Amazon. I think it resonates with a lot of people. And it's funny, from time to time, I go back and reread the book just to kind of remind myself of some of the things that I had done. And it still resonates with me, several years later. So I feel really grateful that I had some good editors, and was able to, I think, write a book that has enduring appeal to people.
Yeah. And now you have a course as well for 2021. I think you launched your course, and that's based on the book, right?
Yes, it's an evolution. So, it's funny that I wrote the book in 2019 before the world completely changed with COVID. And in 2020, I took on a role as the global head of events training and certification at Amazon Web Services. And so, because I was living and breathing training and certification virtually, I thought, hey, rather than write a sequel to my book with some of these new world learnings, why not build a course? And I'm very much the type of person who has a growth mindset. I like to learn by doing, as I'm sure many of your audience members also learn by doing. It's kind of the nature of what we do in events. So I thought, why not just, I will launch a course. And I was lucky in that a vendor had actually approached me and had read my book and proposed turning it into a course. But what I found was, the way that I wrote my book with all the stories woven into it didn't necessarily translate into a course. So I ended up writing a whole new curriculum for my course. It's just a different format, so there was a lot of learnings in doing that. But I think it's, still highly relevant to folks who are interested in up-leveling their career, getting into events. It's got everything from, virtual and event venue information to how to build and run a team successfully with both in-house and working with agencies, to how to build engaging content both virtually and in person. And then, of course, I always weave in stories and examples from my career as well to keep it interesting.
That's fascinating, because it sounds like because you have so many stories in the book, it then didn't translate as easily as this book that would to be more factual, right? More kind of the matter of fact. You mentioned that there's kind of nothing out there. And I just was curious if are you involved with any sort of industry bodies or associations or anything from the sort of meeting and event planning side that you've been a part of?
Yeah, totally. So I'm a member of MPI, and I'm actually a member of several different event leader Slack channels now, which I actually get a lot more out of those than some of these other organizations that I'm members of or have been a member of. I just find that it's the camaraderie, the speed at which you can get responses and support others on Slack has really been interesting over the past couple of years. And that was something that, you know, up until a couple of years ago, didn't really exist. So again, I think it's a really good example of how the industry evolves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm also a member of some different groups. So for example, the Battery is a private event group in San Francisco. And kind of similar to what I've coached people with getting an event certification, I sometimes think you need to focus on areas that can complement your career, but don't necessarily need to be on the nose or the same path for everyone. So to give you an example, rather than get my CMP, for example, Certified Meeting Planner certification, I instead thought, hey, I really want to get my Courtmaster Sommelier certification. And this will also really help me with event planning to be able to know and plan really amazing wines for events. And similarly, I got my interior design certification because not only did that help me, you know, decorate my house, but it helped me speak the design language that I needed to work with my creative agencies and plan environments for my events. So sometimes I think it's okay to be creative with the groups that you join that inspire you and the certifications that you might want to go after. There's a lot of complementary areas and fields, which is another reason why building a career at events, you know, can be a lifelong career. There's just so many different synergies with other industries.
That's really interesting. I think it's really interesting advice in terms of spreading out a little bit more, right? And having sort of not tangential, but sort of complementary education or training in different areas that can help you in some ways.
Are you ready to celebrate your successes in the world of meetings and events? The Skift Meetings Awards are back for 2024, recognizing the most innovative business events companies across 15 categories, and we want you to be a part of it. Winners will feature on Skift Meetings, sending a clear signal to events professionals around the world that these are partners they can rely on. The final deadline for submissions is June 11th. We encourage you to start your submission today to secure the best entry rates. For more information and to start your submission, head to live.skift.com.
Tell me a little bit about your approach to connecting with leadership. You've held some pretty advanced roles, some pretty impressive roles in the corporate side, and I'm sure you've had some pretty intense discussions at the boardroom table, right? How do you get approval for your budgets? What's the theme going to be? Is the CEO going to be on stage? I'm sure you have a lot of difficult conversations in your past, but tell me a little bit about your approach to those, and in terms of, you know, getting that seat at the table and making sure that you, as the person really coordinating everything, gets to speak to the right people.
Yeah. Oh gosh, where to start? There's so many. I think, you know, first and foremost, there comes a point in event planner's career where you have to take that transition from being a planner that's focused on execution to being a leader that's focused on galvanizing a team and being a strategic thought leader. And I remember going through that. It's funny to even think about it because it seems like it was so long ago, but I remember thinking, how do you be more strategic? What does that mean? How, you know? And for people that are so focused at the beginning of their career on how to execute, how to plan logistics, you know, that's what event planners go into event planning for in the beginning. But to kind of take that pivot and think about, why are we having this event? It doesn't make sense. And what is the outcome that we're looking for? And how can we do that in the most efficient and effective way? You know, it really helps you be more strategic and have a seat at that leadership table when you can really prove that what you're doing impacts the brand, impacts the bottom line, impacts the business, is really part of that go-to-market strategy, or really part of, you know, the relationships that the business needs in order to move the needle. That's how you start being able to have a seat at the table. So, you know, it's really moving. I'll never forget, I had a boss once, and he knew that I was strategic. I think he saw it in me, like, before I even knew it in myself. And he said, don't be an order taker. You know, you have a voice. And so I've always remembered that. I don't need to be an order taker. I don't need to just listen to what someone's telling me to do and execute on it. I need to ask questions. Does this make sense? Why are we doing this? And so I think pausing and making sure that you're having that voice, that you're confident in what you're doing and why you're doing it, really allows you to have more power when you're having a seat with leadership. The other thing that I see planners really struggle with, that I think you know, it helps as you know, start to evolve your style, is learning the right altitude to speak with leadership. So I often see younger planners going into these conversations with leadership and wanting to talk about all the tactics and all the little details. And leadership, oftentimes, I mean, there's some leaders that care about that, but many times C-levels do not want to know that. It's going to go right over their head. So it's really understanding what altitude you're going into the conversation with and how much information to share. You can always have an appendix with all those details should you need it, you know, but really focusing on, you know, the what you're doing, why you're doing it, what the outcome will be, you know, and then if you need to, going into the tactics or going into the details. But, you know, you oftentimes will only have a few minutes with leadership in order to sell your idea and get their buy-in. So you need to be really, really strategic with what you're sharing. So I'll just pause there. But those are a couple of things that come to mind.
Yeah, we often talk about that idea of, you know, speaking the language of the C-suite and kind of understanding how to speak to the people in the best possible way. I think that's a really good way to express that. What about creating your own teams? You know, because you've led different teams. Is it the same kind of advice that you give your teams? And how do you structure that, if you will, in terms of building out a team that will really perform for you?
I love building teams. First of all, it's one of the most, it's one of the favorite things that I do when it comes to event planning. And I love building teams because, first of all, with events, you need a team. It is, I mean, I don't know many people who can plan events by themselves, maybe a less complex social event, but with big corporate events, you know, you very seldom see one person who's planning it all. And so I think the first thing is it really comes down to building trust and having solid communication. And this is just foundational for all, you know, human interactions, but it really, really becomes evident when teams fail or succeed with events. You know, a lot of it comes down to the communication and the trust that the teams have. So, you know, one thing that I do is I really try to make sure that it's always a safe space. So people are all welcome to share their opinions. You know, I often will start our team meetings with either an inspirational quote, just to get everybody kind of on in the right mindset, in a positive frame of mind, you know, a one team frame of mind. Or if we're all remote, I'll do a get to know you question or have, you know, a different person lead the meeting each week, just to make sure that everybody has a voice and feels like they've got some skin in the game. And that really goes a long way towards building camaraderie, building trust, opening communication, and making people feel that they, you know, can share and contribute. And that makes them want to share and contribute more if they feel that they're being heard and being accepted. The other thing is, you know, oftentimes event teams are comprised of maybe some in-house folks on the corporate side, maybe some agencies, sometimes some freelancers, often some vendors, then there's, you know, hotels or, you know, venues. So it's all these different team members that need to come together. And, you know, one thing that's really important is making sure that everybody feels that they are part of the same team. And by doing that is you want to always have empathy. And, you know, one thing that really helped me was when I was on the Ritz-Carlton Tech Advisory Board. It was really interesting because I got to hear from the Ritz-Carlton all the things that hotels struggle with and what they need in order to succeed. And also having come from the agency side, having that perspective, running corporate events, and even having been a freelancer at one point, you know, and so understanding and empathizing with, you know, where everyone's coming from and what they need to succeed kind of helps you able to orchestrate everyone together. And so I always keep in mind, what does this person need to motivate them? And how can I galvanize the team that way? And then the other thing is just kind of leading by example. So trying to keep a low ego, you know, I try to keep things positive. I'm very much a proponent of mindset. And if you ask anyone who knows me, they will say that I'm, you know, always positive, almost to a fault. I try to always keep, you know, the focus on the positive. And I do truly believe that you can do really anything that you set your mind to do. And I think that that kind of rubs off on your team. Whereas if you have someone who's always looking for the negative, always, you know, worrying, that can also rub off on a team. And it can be challenging to have the positive mindset when you're an event planner, because you are by nature looking for what could go wrong and how to fix it. So you kind of have to be able to know that in the back of your mind. You're taking every step to ensure that the event is bulletproof and you're doing that methodically, but also making sure that you steer the ship from a visionary perspective, you know, and keep people motivated, keep people galvanized, know that they have a confident leader that's going to guide them and protect them.
Absolutely. Yeah, great advice there. I wanted to make sure we didn't skip on one or two highlights from your career and events that you've planned that you're most proud of. And I think this might be a great moment to jump to that in terms of, you know, you gave us all these advice. You talked about building teams and creating experiences and having that vision. Where do you think that you've been able to apply that really, you know, you really pulled something off that was incredible?
Oh my gosh. So many examples of this. You know, I think one of the events that I planned at Google that I was really proud of was really evolving our Google Cloud business from the time I started. We weren't even called Google Cloud then. We were called Google Enterprise, you know, and being super scrappy, kind of a startup within Google, and then planning a lot of the C-level events. You know, we planned a virtual event, a hybrid event, actually, in 2013, before anyone knew what a hybrid was. We built a hybrid platform and scaled the C-level event globally, which was really, really cool. But yeah, that culminated in the last 2 years I was at Google. I was the executive producer for Google Cloud Next, which is now Google's largest external event. And we grew it from 10,000 people to 30,000 people over 2 years. And just to see, and the first year I did it, I was actually 8 months pregnant while on site as well. So that was a feat in and of itself. went into early labor because of it. But, you know, just to be able to see that strategy evolve incrementally at first, but then to really help change the focus on the goals year over year and achieve those goals. Was really, really incredible to see Google Cloud evolve into, you know, the big successful player in that field that it is now was really, really cool. Another really cool event that was just a crazy feat was leaving Google and joining SoftBank Vision Fund literally the same week I published my book. They had recruited me and the timing was terrible. You know, but sometimes you just take these opportunities when they come up. And I had a whole CEO summit for some of the most powerful CEOs in the world that you can imagine. that were the CEOs of our portfolio company. They would be convening all together, along with all of our limited partners. These were major investors from Asia and the Middle East, and you know, just very powerful players. They're all coming together in 3 months. And SoftBank had already sent out the invites. They did not really know what they were doing. They were banking on this head of events to come in and fix everything. And so, you know, that's what I did. I came in and I knew I needed to hire a team. I needed to execute this. I also had a whole other calendar events that I needed to plan and execute after that. And it was a totally different industry for me. Banking was totally different from tech. You know, it was one of those things where it was just putting one foot in front of the other, figuring out how to bring on freelancers because you can't hire people that quickly to execute an event, bringing on a second agency to support us because the agency that we had on board was just not the right agency. And then we went through some absolutely incredible changes. So just to give you an example of the magnitude of change that we had, you know, that we were dealing with 2 weeks before the event, the head of SoftBank Vision Fund decided he wanted to uninvite all the speakers and change the entire content strategy. And these were speakers like Arianna Huffington, not like no-name speakers. These were very important people that we had to politely uninvite to speak. So
can you just explain what the start of that conversation looked like? Because that must have been a really tough one to figure out.
Yeah, I can explain. So I actually wasn't in that conversation. My boss, the CMO, was in Japan with Masayoshi-san. And I remember her calling me at 8 p.m. And she said, okay, I have some news. I said, okay. And she shared the news. And then she said, there's some more news. And she said, he has invited Donald Trump to attend this event. And that might cause half of the attendees to not want to attend. So we need to figure out how to plan a second event for Trump so that he thinks he's going to be attending this event. Anyways, you know, I could share more, but needless to say, it was pretty radical, the changes that needed to happen in 2 weeks. And fortunately, I do really well in situations like this. I think it was my classical piano training. I just learned how to be really good under pressure. And so I just calmly said, okay, I'm going to think through the steps that we need to take and share with the team. And then that's when I go into just positivity mode. And I remember a couple of my team members kind of freaked out. They were really nervous about the whole thing. And I just told them, you don't worry about it. You do this. I basically just told them what to do to execute, let them just focus on their lane and told them I will take on the worrying of the bigger picture. And sure enough, we pulled it off. And it was seriously one of the best events I've ever produced. You never would have guessed. I even got to meet Arianna Huffington, and that was a highlight.
Did she actually come to the event anyway? How did you negotiate that?
She did. We just, you know, we told her there was a little change in content strategy, but of course she was still invited to come as a guest. And, you know, I remember making sure that she had the best experience, offering her a pashmina and going and buying her a pashmina so she wouldn't be cold at the evening event. Just little things like that to make sure that she felt welcome. And, you know, so it was just all about, you know, focus and not panicking. I think when people panic, they either freeze or it's, you know, fight or flight or freeze. And I just kind of go into, you know, kind of focus. That's the other one that people don't talk about is there's an alternative to that. There's focus. And so I just go into focus and galvanize and mindset. And like I said, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. And I just had it in my mind that there was no way we were going to fail. This was my first event at this company and there was high stakes involved. And so I better figure out how to do it and just put my head down and focus. And we did it. We pulled it off. It was great. But yeah, definitely a little PTSD.
I'm sure a lot of other event professionals can relate. So what keeps you up at night? I mean, it sounds like you could deal with a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, but some things must worry you.
You know, it's funny you say that because there was definitely, this is funny. There were times in my career where I used to have work mares. And my husband actually told me I used to talk in my sleep. I would be asking him things like, how's Reg doing? Like in my sleep. And so I would, you know, things would keep me up at night, like registration numbers and stuff like that. I think now that I'm at where I'm at, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't stress about those things anymore because I know that I have the experience that I pressure test things, I poke holes. You know, I kind of do as much as I possibly can in advance to de-risk an event. And then I know how to roll with the punches on site. I have that level of experience that I know how to handle, you know, unexpected situations with grace. And so that doesn't keep me up at night anymore. The one thing that keeps me up at night is ideas. I find that now that I'm my own boss, I have so many ideas, so many things that I want to do, and a lot of excitement. And sometimes it's hard to calm my brain down at night because I just want to do so much and there's only so many hours. So, you know, it's a different kind of sleeplessness, which is, I think, a better kind, but it's sometimes hard to pace myself.
Fair enough. Thank you for sharing that. What about opportunities and trends that you're seeing up ahead? Is there anything that's really exciting you?
Yeah, totally. I think the obvious one is AI. You know, that's exciting me in the sense that it is going to revolutionize everything. And so events, of course, I think, you know, kind of what I said earlier about how we can become more strategic event planners. I think AI is really going to help us take a lot of the grunt work out of events. And we will be able to focus on a lot more of the strategy and the creative applications, which excites me. It excites me for our industry that we'll be able to up-level ourselves. I think we're, you know, it's still very nascent for our industry and people are still learning even what it means. But I think once, you know, it might just be a year, it might be 2 years, things are moving so quickly. It'll be really exciting to see what the next generation of planners gets to do because a lot of that grunt work will be able to be taken care of for them. I think the other thing that's really near and dear to me that I'm really happy to see a lot more in the news this year is I've always been a really big proponent of wellness and taking care of yourself and your teams. I even write about this in my book. You know, I remember, and this is one of the reasons I love Arianna Huffington is she had this awakening about how sleep was so important. And I had that awakening too, you know, after I had my son and realized how awful sleep deprivation is and how much better I can function as an executive and a leader when I'm rested. It's incredible. Like getting an extra hour of sleep is way more strategic for me and impactful for my team and my company than doing an extra hour of work at night, believe it or not. I'm so much more efficient and strategic and focused the next day. So I love that the events industry is embracing wellness both for themselves and for attendees. We're seeing a lot of this, you know, people are listening. I wrote about this in my book and, you know, it's people are still talking about the fact that event planning is always rated in the top five most stressful careers because of the nature of you know, the number of things that need to be done, how public facing they are. There's always timelines and deadlines and, you know, massive teams involved. There's just a lot that makes it a stressful industry. And so I think it's really important that event planners learn how to take care of themselves and that it's not stigmatized to take care of yourself. It actually makes you a better planner and it will help extend your career so you don't burn out and allow you to have a lifelong career. Similarly, for attendees, I think we're building better experiences for them. And they're not only just good experiences for attendees and help them improve their ROI attending your event when they have places where they can rest, or we're building neurodiverse experiences for different diverse audiences. But it also makes for better business because guess what? When attendees feel they're taken care of and they are in an environment that caters to them and how they can absorb or retain information or experience something, and they have what they need to feel good, to eat healthy, to participate in ways that they want to participate and have breaks, they actually retain more information. and they have different emotions. They don't have stress hormones pumping through them. They instead feel relaxed and open to your ideas. And so it's funny how some of these things that might seem soft are actually very strategic and good for the business. So I love this movement of let's take care of ourselves. Let's take care of our audiences. And this is going to be better for everybody. So that's a trend that I really, really love seeing. And I'm excited to that more people are embracing it.
I love it. I could not agree more. And I think it's great that you highlighted that. And I think that's an excellent place to wrap up in a kind of hopeful place for the future. I want to ask you the kind of final question that we ask all our guests, which is to recommend a future podcast guest, someone else that we should talk to and get their input on some of these questions.
Sure. Well, as you know, I've already recommended three folks to you that are so lovely. You've already interviewed them. So just goes to show what an amazing and insular industry this is. But you know, there's a company that I love. The female founders of the company Eva, Channing and McKinsey, and they are fabulous. And I love their platform. I've been working with them, loving their product. They really have created a beautiful platform that helps planners find and source all kinds of entertainment, speakers, that really kind of helps you curate vetted entertainment into your events. And so I think that they're lovely. And if you'd like an introduction, I'm happy to make one.
Sounds good. Thank you for the recommendation. Now, I know everybody can find you at gianagaudini.com. Anything else that you'd like to share with our guests before we part?
No, just keep this in mind, you know, create your own serendipity and have no bad days.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Jenna. Thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. And I wish you all the best in the progression of your career. It sounds like some exciting future projects ahead. And we'll add the notes about the course and the book in the show notes. And of course, you have a discount code that I think you wanted to mention as well. So we'll add that there. So thank you very much for joining us today.
It was such a pleasure, Miguel.